from Washington, D.C., this is On the Ground. As many Gaza Solidarity encampments are destroyed on college campuses with hundreds of arrests, students at George Washington University mark 1 week of their encampment, and students raise the flag for Palestine.
Who got the power?
We got the power.
Who got the flag on?
We got the flag on.
Who got the flag on?
We got the flag on.
Our students have the courage to speak out in ways that government will not, in ways that universities here will not, in ways that media are not. These are the voices that we have to support.
And International Workers' Day took on a special meaning in 2024 as those rallying connected the issue of labor rights to international solidarity.
While our technology companies profit off of mass surveillance and AI-powered killing campaigns, let us, the people, remain clear about what is right and wrong, and always stand for justice and for humanity.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. First, our headlines. While threatening a ground invasion, Israel continues to bomb the southern Gaza city of Rafah relentlessly. According to Al Jazeera, dozens of Palestinians in Rafah have been killed in just the past few days in multiple bombings of apartment blocks and homes. On Tuesday, April 30th, Israel struck tens of displaced people in Rafah with incendiary weapons. Also, Middle East Eye reports that prominent Palestinian doctor Adnan Al-Barash, a surgeon who was head of orthopedic medicine at Al-Shifa Hospital, died after being tortured in an Israeli prison. The Palestinian Prisoners Society is calling for an investigation into his alleged torture, as well as into the detention and condition of hundreds of other medical professionals taken hostage in Gaza. The society adds that at least 61 children are held in Israeli dungeons. More than 120,000 people are murdered, missing, maimed, or injured in Gaza since October 7th. The United Nations is reporting that across Gaza, there are more than 37 million tons of debris and rubble, and that much of the rubble also contains unexploded bombs, as well as at least 10,000 decomposing bodies, for which Israel is preventing retrieval and burial. In a press release, Gaza's civil defense warns that these corpses will likely increase the threat of diseases and calls on the UN and other international agencies to prioritize heavy equipment for this humanitarian disaster, rather than for construction of a pier being built by the U.S. without permission of the Palestinian people in northern Gaza. Here in the U.S., lawmakers and organizations across the country are calling for investigations into violent attacks on peaceful anti-genocide protests at colleges including Columbia University, Emory University, Dartmouth College, and UCLA. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass is calling for investigations and arrests after a pro-Israeli mob was allowed to attack the UCLA Gaza Solidarity encampment on April 30th for several hours without intervention by security or police. Viral videos show the attackers launching incendiary devices, chemicals, and metal objects and assaulting students with rods and sticks. Quote, "Those involved in launching fireworks at other people, spraying chemicals, and physically assaulting others will be found, arrested, and prosecuted, as well as anyone involved in any form of violence or lawlessness," end quote, Bass said in a statement. She added, quote, "I want to make sure the message I delivered to law enforcement and other officials is clear. Free speech will be protected. Violence and bigotry will not," end quote. One day after the mob attack on the camp, UCLA administrators cited that attack as the reason for calling the Los Angeles Police Department in to dismantle the camp. Peter Eliasberg of the ACLU of Southern California told the BBC that UCLA's decision to dismantle the camp and arrest students was a violation of the students' rights.
There's actually a concept in American law and in the First Amendment called the heckler's veto. We don't allow people who want to use violence to silence and intimidate protesters as a justification to stop protesters from engaging in their rights. So first of all, UCLA became aware. There was a lot of evidence of threats towards the encampment from people. People released a whole group of rats into the encampment from outside who were clearly attempting to intimidate the protesters. The university needed to take steps, try to de-escalate that situation, try to keep people further apart and so on. And if it became necessary, to use police presence to stop the people who are acting violently.
Okay.
You didn't then say, well, we can't have protesting because thugs are going to attack them and engage in violence.
One university that has stood out in its handling of student demands is Brown University in Rhode Island, where school administrators actually held talks with student protesters and agreed to hold a vote in October on divestment from companies supplying the Israeli military. Here in D.C., district officials have declined requests to dispatch police to George Washington University, describing the encampment there as a peaceful protest. We'll have more news and analysis about Gaza later in the show with Voices of Workers on May Day and with historian Gerald Horn. And those are headlines and happenings. Up next, the Gaza Solidarity Encampment at George Washington University here in D.C., less than a mile from the White House, braces for an attack that never comes and raises a flag for liberation. Stay with us. In advance of a threatened attack by pro-Zionist counter-demonstrators, the Gaza Solidarity Encampment at George Washington University held a morning protest on Thursday, May 2nd, which also marked 7 full days since they launched the encampment on the campus located in the Foggy Bottom neighborhood of downtown D.C.
We are speaking on behalf of the DMV Coalition of Students for Justice in Palestine. We are represented by students from George Washington University, Georgetown University, American University, George Mason University, Gallaudet University, Howard University, University of Maryland College Park, and the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Eight days ago, the DMV SJP Coalition launched our encampment right here at George Washington University, occupying our campus as a collective. George Washington University, a bloodthirsty institution smeared with the pain and suffering of colonial hegemonies. Yay! George Washington University is the largest landowner in D.C. after the U.S. federal government. Yay! It is responsible for gentrifying the heart of D.C. and displacing entire communities of color. Shame! George Washington University is literally the landlord of the IMF right over there and the World Bank. Yay! The two largest institutions of Western imperialism financially. Yay! After over 168 hours, we are still here holding our ground. imperial core of the world, demonstrating the will of the masses for a world of freedom, collectivism, and community. Everything the global capitalist machine seeks to deprive us of. We will not be pushed aside. Stop funding genocide. For 4 days, GW trapped students in UYard with barricades, forcing students to endure unsafe and dehumanizing conditions. Students were surveilled, monitored, and subject to psychological torture via threats of arrest that would wake them up repeatedly throughout the night. GW restricted the students' access to running water, restrooms, or medical help, even as some of them were becoming sick or on their periods. Our medic was working for over 48 hours continuously to keep us safe because GWPD refused to let in another medic to take her place. Let me be abundantly clear. George Washington University's administration and police used student health and safety as a bargaining chip to suppress our protest.
GW, we know you. You imprison children too.
You imprison children too.
Israel, we know you.
Okay, so I'm out here at GW with William Yeomans. He's a professor of media, and he's with faculty and staff standing in support of justice in Palestine this morning. The camera's been out here for a week now, and I know that today a lot of the organizers were expecting perhaps some interference from pro-Zionist groups today. I don't know if maybe the group of faculty came today to support the students.
I'm here with a group of faculty from all the universities in the DMV. We're here because we're worried about the prospects of counter-protesters using intimidation, violence, threats to try to silence and suppress the protest encampment. We've been here actually almost every day to show support for these courageous student activists who are really speaking out against this genocide in Gaza, which takes a lot of bravery because they're going against an entire system from the government, media, to academia. And our message is that what they are saying needs to be heard.
Yeah. And what are some of the things that you've observed? I guess even as a media professional, and I know that I should tell the people listening or watching this that you had a career as a MC. What was your stage name?
Iron Sheik,
okay.
But it's ancient history.
People should know that you have spoken out on many different levels and many different platforms. So, but what have you seen since you've been here?
You know, these students are not just calling attention to this horrific genocide in Gaza. They're also living out revolutionary ideals. You can see their principles, the rules of the camp, written on a whiteboard, and they're hanging up, and they're representing an ethic of mutual respect, of responsibility, of collective sharing. These students are really putting into practice a lot of the principles that they're being taught at the university, unlike other students who just sort of show up, do the assignments, but don't really internalize the sort of norms of citizenship that we try to teach, which is to be responsible, to care about the world, to be engaged in the issues of the day. They're not just lowering their heads and finishing their school up and moving on to their careers. These students are genuinely committed to changing the world for the better. and faculty should be supporting that kind of thing, because this is about what we teach.
Right. And what's your reaction to what happened out at UCLA? There were two things. First, I think on Tuesday night, the encampment there was attacked by pro-Israeli mobs. I saw one report that there were 200 of these very violent people attacking them with rods and poles and chemical irritants and all types of weapons. And then last night, the LAPD descended on the UCLA.
We saw the terrible scenes of violence and intimidation at UCLA. These pro-Israeli mobs tried to use force to coerce the encampment into silence. They tried to destroy the encampment. I saw pictures of bloodied protesters who've been attacked by tear gas canisters. They used bear spray. This is the fundamental logic, unfortunately, of supporting Israel, that violence, that force, will be used against those who demand equality for the Palestinians. It's a logic of dehumanization. The camp is courageous to stand up against this kind of violence, and that's why faculty are mobilizing today to say that enough is enough and that we need to open up debate about the state of Israel and its foundation, which is based on violence, dispossession, and displacement.
Yeah, and then we are fortunate, I suppose, to be right here in D.C., where we see that in Congress, there is a proposal for more anti-Semitism legislation. And unlike the former pieces, this is not a resolution. This is an act that the House passed with 80% of the votes yesterday. And so this one would criminalize a lot of what we have learned, a lot of what people have learned in this most iteration of the movement, that Israel is an apartheid state, that is a settler colonial state. So it will criminalize people actually voicing these types of facts. Yeah.
Too many members of Congress are willing to tear up the Constitution for the state of Israel. They don't want to have a debate on this because they know that it's fundamentally wrong. So they're trying to use the law to suppress free speech. It's unsustainable.
Right.
And nobody's gonna be intimidated by this kind of thing. They're all doing it for campaign dollars. They're not doing it because it's the right thing to do. They're doing it to silence debate.
Right. Okay, so I'm gonna head over to some of the rally right now, but what are you want to say to other faculty around the country and just your peers who are probably facing some of these same dilemmas or same issues at their campuses? And I guess a lot of them are just thankful that the semester's almost over. Yeah.
Israel's destroyed every university in Gaza and has killed 200 members of the faculty, including deans of universities. This is not just a question of free speech on campus. This is a question of basic human principles, of standing up in solidarity with those who are suffering the brunt of this genocide. Our students have the courage to speak out in ways that government will not, in ways that universities here will not, in ways that media are not. These are the voices that we have to support. Even if you don't fully agree with the Palestinian claims against Israel, you have to recognize that this is something that we have to be talking about on campuses. Students are finally forcing those conversations that administrations have tried to suppress for far too long. This is an important moment. And how do you want to be remembered in history? Do you want to be remembered as someone who is part of the silencing or someone who hid while there was silencing of student activism happening? Or do you want to be remembered as someone who took the courageous position to do what was right, even if there was great risk involved?
Okay. And so I've been speaking with William Yeomans. He's a professor here at George Washington University in Media Studies. Thank you so much, Professor Yeomans.
Thank you.
Thursday's rally at George Washington University concluded with no confrontation with a pro-Zionist group, which was holding a rally nearby. But within minutes of the last chant of Free Palestine, there was a new excitement at the Gaza Solidarity Camp, as some members succeeded in raising a large Palestinian flag up a 20-foot pole at the edge of the encampment. After several minutes of rallying and celebrating, Campus police arrived and were booed as they took down the flag. It was taken away by students who then returned it to the flagpole and, after a struggle with campus police, raised the flag again. The students declared victory and rallied again with chants of "Student power, we got the power, and we raise the flag."
We got the power! We got the power! We got the power! We got the power!
We got the power!
We got the flag up?
We got the flag up!
Who got the flag up?
We got the flag up!
Who got the flag up?
We got the flag up!
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, International Workers' Day on May 1st took on a special meaning in 2024 as those rallying connected the issues of worker rights with solidarity with the people of Palestine. On May 1st in D.C., a coalition of workers, union members, and social justice organizations rallied in Franklin Park in downtown D.C. before marching to the encampment at George Washington University. Here are some of their voices.
People will say, what on earth does International Workers' Day have to do with freeing Palestine? Well, we can start with the fact that every year, $3.8 billion are stolen from you and I in tax dollars being sent over to carry out a genocide against another people. This is money and resources that can be used to fight homelessness, to fight hunger, to make sure everyone has housing and clean water and quality food and quality education. Why, the Joe Biden administration and Congress just approved $14 billion more dollars to Israel. And they did this in the blinking of an eye. Think about that. All of these issues around student loan debt and infrastructure, all these things that are sorely needed by everyday people in this country, all of that get held up for months and debated and talked about and discussed ad infinitum. But when it comes to funding war, when it comes to funding destruction, when it comes to funding bloodshed, when it comes to funding genocide, both ruling class parties, Democrats and Republicans, have absolutely no issue giving our money away for another people's destruction. And so that's why we are gathered here today on International Workers' Day, saying free Palestine, saying all power to the workers, and we'll continue to say that since working people make the world run, working people should run the world. Free, free Palestine! I want you all to join me as we begin by welcoming Attica from Doctors Against Genocide. Give Attica a round of applause.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for having me today. I'm coming from New Jersey. Came down to Capitol Hill today to do some lobbying. I've been taking time out of my busy schedule, something I've never done before. But I've been doing it for the last couple of months, and sometimes it's like talking to a wall. To them, unfortunately, but we have to keep up the work. I want to dedicate this speech to the students. honestly, I feel like it's the only guiding light right now. And I feel like maybe this is the beginning of the end, as it was with South Africa apartheid. So we need to do everything we can to support our students right now through this movement. And as a community, we've got to do everything we can to show up to their camps, keep them going, protect them from our militant police forces that are brutalizing them. Last night, we saw the brutalization at Columbia University, and as well as the City College of New York. Hundreds of arrests. They entered Hamilton Hall in Columbia. The students renamed it Hins Hall, and the police actually entered in through a ladder to remove the students, and they were extremely brutal. They threw students down staircases. They entered with their guns drawn. This is a university campus. They are absolutely the violence. They are the violence. They are what makes our campuses unsafe. I'm sure some of you have been to the encampments in DC. There's GW, several other universities. Amazing, just amazing, beautiful places, beautiful spaces of healing, of community. The work that the students are doing together is just absolutely amazing. In New Jersey, we've got Princeton University, Rutgers. Rutgers Newark campus just did it today. So it's spreading, and the more they try to silence us, the louder we will be. So we know that. We're not going anywhere. So there's two things from a healthcare worker standpoint I really want to talk to you all about, because I don't want to lose sight of these. I think sometimes they try to distract us with bombing embassies in Damascus or presenting ridiculous resolutions about anti-Semitism in the Congress. These are all distractions from their atrocities, the daily atrocities that are being uncovered in Gaza every single day. So number one, I want to talk about the mass graves that are being found. As you may have heard, in Nasser Hospital, they uncovered 400 bodies, and they expect it to be over 500. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about Rafah, and I see the signs here, hands off Rafah. All eyes on Rafah right now. They are planning on invading it. They've already started bombing Rafah for several weeks now, and that will be truly a slaughter of 1.6 million people. So the world has to be very much aware of that. So I'm here from Doctors Against Genocide and Healthcare Workers for Palestine. I'll just start by saying we're in awe of the brave students, faculty, staff, and community members all over the world. Standing on the right side of history in this most unjust, brutal, inhumane, and heinous genocide. We started last month of April learning about the horrors of Al-Shifa Hospital, where there was a 14-day siege that left it incinerated, burned, and gutted to the core in complete and utter destruction. We learned that over 900 medical staff, patients, and people that were taking refuge in the hospital were abducted. Over 400 bodies were uncovered in the rubble, zip-tied, blindfolded, and bulldozed alive. Shame! Some of them were children found in the rubble. This is absolute atrocity and shame. Now, in the past week, amidst all this buzz of college encampments, our government's inexplicable vote for $26 billion of our hard-earned tax money to a genocidal state, the mounting fear of a regional escalation due to Israel's provocations against Iran, we learn about another horrific hospital atrocity, mass graves that were found outside of Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, with over 400 bodies discovered. There's a wonderful poster by EuroMed Human Rights. I didn't get a chance to bring it with me from New Jersey, but please go look up this poster on EuroMed Human Rights Monitor. It shows over 130 mass graves that have been found in Gaza since October 7th, with over 3,000 bodies exhumed. Shame! Shame! This is something the world can never, ever tolerate. The state in which they're finding these bodies, their elderly people, their children, mothers, patients with their hospital gowns on and medical equipment that's still in their body. So they were being treated in the hospital and they're getting mass executed. Now we know that when we see all those horrific pictures of them stripping the men down and blindfolding them and zip tying their hands and putting them on a truck and taking them away, we know where they're going. It's very, very clear. It's undeniable now. And we have to condemn this.
We call on the UN, ICJ, and all nation states and people around the world to condemn these most gruesome, heinous war crimes by Israel. While our own AIPAC-controlled government continues its Hasbara, or propaganda campaign, to confuse Americans about who the real terrorists are, the real perpetrators of mass violence and killing, while our weapons manufacturers pump out weapons of mass destruction, redevelopment companies like BlackRock remain poised with their government contracts in Ukraine, Gaza, and elsewhere, and while our technology companies profit off of mass surveillance and AI-powered killing campaigns, let us, the people, remain clear about what is right and wrong, and always stand for justice and for humanity. That is our oath as healthcare workers. We do not swear allegiance to any country, religion, or ethnicity. We treat every human life as sacred and equal, and we will continue to serve human beings in need wherever they are. We call on all healthcare workers, especially our fellow physicians, to lead the way in this righteous battle for freedom, justice, and peace. Now Netanyahu, Satanyahu, he's threatening an imminent attack on Rafah, an area the size of 25 square miles. It's the size of Newark, New Jersey, but it has a population over San Diego. 1.6 million besieged people, half of them children, who have been crammed into these designated safe zones. They're now being terrorized daily with missile strikes, bombings, famine, disease, and horrendous living conditions. Now they're being terrorized by daily threats of a ground invasion that the UN warns will be a human slaughter. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has said that the U.S. is the only country that can prevent Israel from invading Rafah, and that an invasion would be the greatest catastrophe in the history of Palestinian people. We urge all Americans and the world to keep all eyes on Rafah. Keep calling and emailing your reps every day demanding no invasion of Rafah, no regional escalations with Iran or any other country, full restoration of UNRWA funding. And lastly, I just want to say again, to all the students around the world taking these brave, heroic, historic actions for Palestine, we salute you, we support you, and we stand with you. All right, thank you so much.
Netanyahu, you can't hide!
Netanyahu, you can't hide!
We charge you with genocide!
We charge you with genocide!
I am from SAG-AFTRA and Sister Guild members for Ceasefire. We are close to 650 rank and file labor union members, repping more than 16 SAG-AFTRA locals and over 40 individual unions and locals, domestic and international. As proud rank and file union workers from every corner of our industry, working on screen, stage, set, and in the field, we are united in solidarity with the global call for a permanent ceasefire and the end to the occupation and genocide. As art workers, content workers, media workers, news workers, as a union of artists and storytellers, we have to reckon with the fact that our industry and our employers are essential organs of Western imperial supremacy, the military-industrial complex, dehumanization, and colonialization. Our employers, our storytelling industry, overwhelmingly chooses to prioritize, glorify, and commodify stories that uphold American exceptionalism, oppression, antagonism, individualism, conquest, violence, and dehumanization.
Shame.
Shame. So I guess this is why SAG-AFTRA and many of our unions in the entertainment and media space have not only remained silent, but have actively ignored the call of solidarity from our Palestinian comrades and colleagues. Through silence, they have endorsed genocide, apartheid, and occupation, and they have not lifted a finger to tell a story of Palestinian humanity and liberation. Shame. More than 140 journalists have been killed, and just this past Saturday, leaders attended the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Shame. Unions have not only turned their backs on Palestinian labor colleagues in the press, health, education sectors, but also fellow journalists. They have remained silent and complicit. They failed to join in solidarity with other labor colleagues, such as United Auto Workers, Service Employees International Union, American Postal Workers Union, United Electrical Workers, and countless others. They have also ignored our repeated requests for even the bare minimum of calling for a ceasefire. Shame. As they continue to cast their own membership aside, we rank and file members would not let that deter us. Our humanity will not let us. So all I want to say is tonight we, as rank and file members, have power over the stories we tell, the stories we choose to elevate and reflexively change our culture. Those stories start with us. As rank and file SAG, AFTRA, and Sister Guild members, we reject the current paradigm. We reject our union's deference to Israel. And we will rebuild this industry by telling stories that elevate peace, struggle, liberation, solidarity, and people power. On this International Workers' Day, on this May Day, we remain in solidarity with those exercising their right to strike, their right to protest, their right to speak out against injustice, even in the face of intimidation. The Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions has issued an urgent call to organize labor, and rank and file members have answered as we unite with workers and students everywhere. We will continue until liberation. We will continue until there's a free Palestine.
That was Lizbeth of SAG-AFTRA speaking at the May Day rally, May 1st, 2024, in downtown D.C., before her ATECA from Doctors Against Genocide. And the first speaker was Sean Blackman from the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
My name is Matthew, and I am a proud rank-and-file member of American University Staff Union, SEIU Local 500. I stand here today bearing many emotions. Pride for the student revolution taking place all over this country. Disgust at our government's complicity in this genocide. Outrage at the fascist legions mustering in every corner of this globe, ready to feast upon the flesh of the indigenous and the workers. I feel above all profound sorrow for what the world is allowing to happen in Gaza. Nevertheless, the strength and steadfastness of our comrades in Palestine ought to renew our resolve. All around us, the walls are cracking and are ready to fall down. Every time we speak out together in one voice and we demand the dissolution of exploitative capitalist imperialist forces with their boots on our necks, one more brick falls down from this wall. Make no mistake, the bourgeois forces of militarist colonialism that oppress the workers all around the world are the exact same forces buttressing the vile and wicked Zionism, slaughtering our comrades in Palestine. Yeah! Oh Gaza, we the workers hear your cry. We have this to say, you do not stand alone. Workers and students of the world, unite And together, with one voice, students and workers together, we say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
And I was thinking about Dr. King and his speech on his opposition to the Vietnam War and how viciously he was attacked for taking a principled stance as a moral man, as a man of faith, and as a man of principle. Dr. King said, "The bombs dropped in Vietnam explode in the ghettos of the United States." He talked about the incredible amount of money that is spent to kill people in Vietnam and how little money is spent on poor and working people in the United States. So my friends, you and I have to understand war and genocide and all the money and resources that go into it constitute a theft from the poor and working masses of the people of the United States. And that is why it is so important that we are here on May Day to say, free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
You just heard Sean Blackman, and before him, Matthew of the American University Workers Union, Local 500. They were both speaking at the May Day rally held in Franklin Park in downtown D.C. on May 1st, 2024. On the Ground is a totally listener-sponsored, supported show, and we are in need of your support. If you rely on the show, if you listen to the show, you come to look forward to what we are able to offer every week, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ On the Ground Show. And you can also give on our website through PayPal or other means if you want to send a check. All that information is there. But please, please support us. I want to thank our supporters on Patreon so much. And for those who are already supporting, if you can tell a friend who you know would love to sign up, we need the support. Patreon.com/ On the Ground Show or go to onthegroundshow.org. Thank you. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Iverum. And now I'm joined by our geopolitical analyst, the author and activist, Professor Gerald Horn, the Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, and the author of more than 40 books. Welcome back to the show, Gerald.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we have a lot of news to get through in a short amount of time. But I was just really struck by this week, so many important, really frightening pieces of legislation or statements from lawmakers here in the nation's capital. It started with Representative Ilhan Omar calling out the statements by Senator Blackburn of Tennessee, who suggested that students protesting could be put on the terrorism watch list and the no-fly list. And then, of course, on Wednesday night, we had 80% of the House of Representatives voting in favor of something called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which, unlike previous mere resolutions, actually proposes to make it a law to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. And already, Jewish groups themselves have come out in opposition to this legislation. But with 80% of the House voting for it, this is very, very dangerous.
Very dangerous indeed. And we do not necessarily expect courage when it reaches the floor of the U.S. Senate. And I should also say that we shouldn't expect courage, because if you look at the men who have carried this legislation, I'm speaking of Congressman Torres of the Bronx, a favorite New York Times neoconservative columnist Brett Stevens. I'm thinking of Congressman Mike Lawler of New York State, who is facing a difficult reelection campaign in November and is obviously trawling for campaign donations from Zionist billionaires. But the danger in this legislation is profound and mind-boggling. On the one hand, as you've suggested, you have many Jewish groups, including the organization that helped to sponsor Kenneth Stern, who came up with this original definition that equates anti-Zionism with anti-Jewish fervor. He's backing away from his own creation. And Congressman Gerald Nadler of Lower Manhattan, who is of Jewish ancestry, he's been a staunch and stern critic of this legislation because we know from the demonstrations that many Jewish people in Jewish Voices for Peace, If Not Now, etc., are not necessarily fans of Zionism. And of course, if you look at the history of Zionism, it was not necessarily a majority creed amongst Jewish Americans for a good deal of the 20th century. And then there might be the ultimate danger. I'm speaking of the fact that many in the ultra-right of the U.S. Congress, particularly Congresswoman Taylor Greene, have suggested that they're against this legislation because, as she sees it, it will restrain her ability to revive and resuscitate anti-Semitic canards such as that Jewish people are responsible for the killing of Jesus Christ, which over the centuries has been the pretext for torture, for pogroms, mass murder. She was not alone in making this bald-faced assertion. And although I have suggested that we do not necessarily expect courage in the U.S. Senate, this is one time when I'm hoping that this arbitrary rule that suggests that you need 60 votes to pass anything in the Senate actually comes into play.
Of course, we have some other important news and analysis coming out. I'm looking at a story in Consortium News, really just calling out what is really happening in Gaza, in historic Palestine, where we see Rafah under continued bombing assault as Netanyahu continues to threaten a ground invasion, but they're already attacking Rafah, killing dozens, if not hundreds, this week. Also, the pogroms continue in the West Bank with the IOF and settlers attacking, killing, maiming, destroying property of Palestinians there. But this piece by Jonathan Cook, it just talks about how the farce of continuing negotiations offering Hamas a deal that they know cannot be accepted because a temporary ceasefire with releasing all the Israeli hostages is no solution for people who will, after the ceasefire, be under bombardment again and under the same threat of a so-called ground invasion, which Netanyahu is saying will happen anyway, whether there's a ceasefire or not. So it's kind of holding a gun to someone's head while you're supposedly negotiating with them so that Blinken and the rest of the Biden administration can say, well, we tried, but Hamas, they didn't want to have peace.
Well, what you've articulated helps to substantiate powerful, explosive story reported that apparently the International Criminal Court is looking to indict Mr. Netanyahu himself and perhaps other members of his war cabinet. I would also warn the authorities in the White House, in the State Department, in the Pentagon, that potentially, at least, they could be looked at as aiders and abettors helping to back this war criminal, speaking of Mr. Netanyahu. And it also reminds us that the crimes that Mr. Netanyahu is being accused of in historic Palestine may not be limited to that particular jurisdiction. If you look carefully at what's befallen student protesters on this side of the Atlantic, I'm speaking of the chemical spraying of students at Columbia University. I'm speaking of what happened at UCLA this week in terms of releasing mice into the encampments. they bear eerie earmarks of some of the chief tactics of the Israeli Defense Force. And I would also draw this parallel as well, that U.S. allies seem to have carte blanche to run amok in the United States against U.S. nationals. I'm thinking of the story that just came out this week concerning how the Indian equivalent of the CIA, the Research and Analysis Wing in New Delhi, is being accused of plotting the assassination of a Sikh activist in New York City. Of course, they've been credibly accused of doing the same in Canada just a few months ago. And this question of foreign agents running amok in the United States really needs to be taken quite seriously. And it needs to be taken quite seriously because Israel is under increasing international isolation and bids fair to take the United States down with it. I'm thinking not only of the case brought in the International Court of Justice against the Federal Republic of Germany by Nicaragua in terms of Germany being a major arms supplier to Israel. I'm thinking of the fact that Turkey has said that it will be joining the South African case in the International Court of Justice against Israel, where already there's been a case for a plausible genocide taking place. Ankara has also said that it will be cutting all trade ties with Israel, including imports and exports. Colombia has vowed to break relations, diplomatic relations with Israel. So increasingly, Israel is being isolated. This obviously will redound to the detriment of its chief ally, the United States of America. And obviously, the ultimate victims are the Palestinians. But given what I've said about UCLA and Columbia University, we will not escape unscathed. And speaking of Columbia University, we also know that there's a close relationship between Columbia and particularly the Israeli government, the School of International and Public Affairs, which houses war criminals like Victoria Nuland and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. They are there. I was surprised, in fact, that the protesters at Columbia chose not to occupy their building in Upper Manhattan as opposed to Hamilton Hall.
You know, what you said reminded me that there's been a repeated criticism, actually, of the fact that the United States is violating its own law, the so-called Leahy Law, which forbids the United States to give any type of military assistance or funding to a state that is denying U.S. humanitarian aid, or to a military that is committing human rights abuses. And this has been brought up for months now. And Secretary of State Blinken and I guess the entire Biden administration seems to be turning a blind eye to this law. And it just further tears down what are supposed to be U.S. law, U.S. constitutional rights. They're all being kind of thrown out of the window when it comes to Israel, whether it's our right to freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to not have your person violated. That's the Fourth Amendment. Now, this is a law, the Leahy Law.
Well, one must give credit to an extent to Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who has pointed out the hypocrisy and the contradiction of the United States sending tons of weapons to Israel to kill Palestinians and then having this paltry, mealy-mouthed humanitarian gesture to supply aid to the Palestinians. This seems to be at cross purposes. But the other piece of legislation we should be concerned about in light of what we've just talked about in terms of a possible International Criminal Court indictment of Mr. Netanyahu and his comrades is the so-called Hague Invasion Act of 2002 under George W. Bush, which suggests that the United States should not cooperate with the ICC. And if push comes to shove, although this may be a tad hyperbolic, in fact, invade The Hague to accomplish U.S. political and strategic goals.
And right, exactly. So I have to take the cue and the tone from the students who, you know, who say that, you know, we're not afraid. And so as independent media, we can't be afraid either to continue to point out this authoritarian march toward thought crime, speech crime, and the ways that this government is denying what are supposed to be our rights. I have been speaking to our geopolitical analyst, Professor Gerald Horn, who we are happy will be joining us May 11th, 6 to 9 p.m. at Busboys and Poets to celebrate On the Ground's 10th anniversary, but also the 220th anniversary of the Haitian Revolution. And Gerald, you'll be talking about how that victory, you know, 220 years ago is so connected to the struggles that we're talking about today.
Oh, absolutely. And it's highly appropriate that we will be marking this occasion shortly after May Day, May 1, because we all know that when Haiti triumphed on January 1st, 1804, it was a victory for the entire working class, spearheaded by the unpaid sector of the working class, otherwise dubbed as the enslaved. We also know that the Haitian Revolution was a jolt of adrenaline into the mainstream of the entire hemispheric working class, leading to the growth of unions, leading to a struggle for an eight-hour day. So I am quite pleased and honored to be visiting with you and your friends and comrades at Busboys and Poets on May 11th in the evening.
Awesome. Okay. So thank you for joining me today, and we'll talk to you next week right before the big day.
Right on.
And that will do it for today's show. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital on 24 stations on the Pacifica Radio Network, on all your podcast platforms at On the Ground Show with Esther Averam, and on our website, onthegroundshow.org. In addition to communicating with us on our website, you can let us know you like the show on Twitter, Facebook, and on patreon.com at On the Ground Show. Or I also link to every show on my Instagram page, which is Esther, E-S-T-H-E-R underscore Averam. That's I, V like Victor, E-R, E-M like Mary. Follow the Free Palestine Movement at shutitdownforpalestine.org and at answercoalition.org. And tickets are available for our 10th anniversary celebration on Eventbrite by searching On the Ground 10th Anniversary. The music we played this hour included New World Coming by Nina Simone, Race Babbling by Stevie Wonder, and our theme music is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. I'm Esther Averam. Until next time, take good care and keep raising your voice. Peace.